because I didn't get no cake. And y'all got the nerve to eat cake and we sit up here and talk about each other. But I want to let y'all know I am impressed by all the guys in Al-Anon. And welcome to the newcomers, Duke and Ryan. Welcome. I know you're in for a ride. And congratulations to all the celebrants that's in the house tonight. And just for your information, Maddie is the newcomer in this house, okay? I'm the old timer, she the newcomer. I keep trying to help out, but she resists. Been sober since December the 9th, 1988, the grace of God, that one cold day, one cold morning, as our book say, how dark it is before the dawn. I'm retired from the railroads. I'm an engineer from the railroad, and one of the great things that my job allowed me to do was to go to treatment. Forever grateful for that. The only note I ever wrote in my entire life to my job was a thank you letter to them for allowing me to go to treatment. So I've been sober for 34 years. One thing leads to another, you know. If you ever heard Joe and Charlie, it always say that's trouble with fun. It always finds trouble. And I started off like nobody else, you know, drinking and drugging, and it was a lot of fun. And I guess I crossed the line somewhere down the line there. I'm from South Texas, a little town in South Texas, about 100 miles from the border. And I moved to Houston, and I was in Houston for a couple of years. When you started getting toward the end where this alcoholism and drug addiction started showing out in your life, you know, you have a tendency to run out of money, especially a couple of days after payday. So I was in this neighborhood where one of my good friends that was responsible, I was going by to borrow some money. I had a new car. That's one thing I would do. I always buy new stuff, but I couldn't pay for it, but I had it. And I went by this friend's house to borrow some money because I had this new car and I didn't have no gas. And I stopped by and showed him this car and everything. And he liked the car. And I said, and by the way, since you like the car, let me borrow $20. You know, that's been a long time ago, $20 for gas, man. Got this money, and I had this tendency when I get broke, I like to hang around people's house, you know, because I ain't got nothing to eat, so I'm finna mooch and whatever. They had somewhere to go, and they invited me to go. And I must have been desperate because they were going to a baby shower. Now, you know, men don't go to baby showers, but I decided I was up for the challenge. So I went to the baby shower. I get at the baby shower, and guess who's at the baby shower? She's in the kitchen, and I made a gesture. I waved at her, and I pointed at her. I said, hello, you. Can I talk to you? And she had the nerve to act like she was invisible. She pointed to herself, I know you're not talking to me. Yeah, I'm talking to you. She said, hell no. And she left. Any alcoholic worth his grift know a challenge when he meets one, he's always up to it. So I was determined to meet her. Well, you see, we're sitting here 42 years later, so you know I was determined. One thing led to another. We danced around there a little bit. And we finally got married. Drugs and alcohol began to ravage his family and everything. And Maddie had a lot of Al-Anon in her before she even knew it, because it got to a point she wasn't taking it no more. And one day she said she was moving because she couldn't stand me not coming home with the paycheck. And most Al-Anon, when they say they gonna move, they really don't mean they gonna move. You know what I mean? They keep talking smack. They ain't gonna do nothing. But here's a key when you know they're getting ready to do something. It's when they quit talking, when they don't say anything. And then they give you subtle hints, like you go in the ice box and there's no food in the ice box. No, no, no. It's two or three eggs in the ice box and them dried up weenies. And you know, you can't even get the eggs out of the crate because they done cracked so. But they full. Everybody full, but there ain't no food in the house. And then they started making little comments, like they look at you and they say stuff like, you still here? Like you invisible. You know, you hear this. And then they started talking about you without talking to you, like, I wish he'd die and stuff like that. You know, you can hear them talking, but they don't, they're not talking to you, you know, like when you gonna get ran over by a truck or something like that. I mean, come on here, man. So she say, you keep this up, I'm gonna move. And I finally told her, you know, you say that much, you got to reply. I said, why don't you move? Quit talking about it, move. Well, I went to work one day. I rarely went to work, but I went to work that day. And when I came back home, Maddie had moved. And she used my friends to move her. Now, I was pissed about that. But I found out what that was about later down the road. I always wanted a lot of room, and I had a lot of room because when Maddie moved, she moved everything out of there. What, nothing in that house. Only thing was in that house was when I walked in, I was in there. When I walked out, it was empty. But I worked on the railroad, and I had a... Y'all know what railroad landings are? Y'all shake y'all head. Y'all know what those are? Okay. I had stole a bunch of them since I've been working. I might need them one day. They come in handy. So I took a railroad lantern and hung on each doorknob in my house. So by 5:30, when it got dark, I just turned those lanterns on. I had lights. And when my neighbor went to work, I went out in the front yard, I turned that water on, and I take them cold baths. Now, y'all know that y'all got the In-N-Out burgers out there. I took the first In-N-Out shower. You ever take a cold shower? You in and you out. You don't be hanging around in there. First, In-N-Out. That's where I think that burger place got that from. Anyway, things getting worse, man. One morning I'm laying around there. I'm gonna see you sometime, baby. But it's getting good here. One morning I'm laying in my abandoned house, and I wake up and Maddie is standing over me. I immediately got a resentment. Who comes to somebody's abandoned house without calling them? You know, I got pissed. She should have called me and let me know she was coming by. Like I had a phone or something she can call, you know. And we did what we always did. We started arguing. And she was telling me about how sorry my life was and why don't I come outside and get behind her car where she can back over me and end my pitiful life. I'm like, get the hell out of my abandoned house. Something wrong with Maddie, though, for real. Anyway, my kid came around the corner. Now, you all that have kids, this is what happened. That kid came around the corner, and she saw me living the way I was living, and she began to cry. And that kid began to cry, did something to me. Now, I didn't care how Maddie felt about the situation, but that kid did something for me. So she left. I'm from Kingsville. I'm not from Houston. I shouldn't have never came to the city. I need to go back where I came from. Houston messed me up. I'm gonna go on, skip and get back to Kingsville. Dear Maddie, sometime. One thing led to another. I got down there in Kingsville. They call that a geographical cure. What you find out, wherever you are, you know. I get down to Kingsway and the wheels come off down there too. My saving grace came one Saturday night. I always got, you know, I do pretty good on payday, but the next day I'm broke. Man, this was in 88, I was making close to $100,000. If you looked at me, it didn't look like I was making $10 a week. That's how raggedy I was. I had, my sister was taking care of me, and she had two kids, so she had three kids she was taking care of. One Friday night, I did what I always do. I go to the local beer joint, get high, get hyped up, go back home. In our book, it said the three horsemen came to call on me. Terror, bewilderment. And when I take drugs or any kind of type, I get real paranoid. And I have a tendency to get hot. Now, when I get hot, I don't know no other way to tell you, but I get naked. But now, ain't nothing wrong with getting naked in your house. Ain't nothing wrong with getting naked going out in the backyard. But it's definitely something wrong getting naked going out in the front yard. I felt somebody peeping in my house. So I go outside and I'm sitting outside with my nakedness by 3 o'clock in the morning, looking in my own house, trying to see who was looking in the house at me. I'm tripping real bad. And I see this guy walking down the street by 3 o'clock in the morning, and I run out there and I stop him. I say, can you tell me if you saw anybody looking in my house? And this guy tells me, man, you need to go get some help. And my normal state, when somebody told me I need to go help, I'm ready to fire back at him. But he had me. He had clothes on, I didn't. So I had to agree with him. I was like, yeah, you might be right on that. And that was the light at the end of the rainbow for me, for that guy tell me to go get some help. And I went to treatment. I had to come back to Houston. My sister drove me back to Houston. I was in treatment 2 days later. One thing led to another. Saved Maddie some time. Got me this wonderful sponsor. I still was associating alcoholism and drug addiction with color. I was in treatment. It was me and 30 other white people. I thought I was the only black guy had screwed up. I was like, what the hell? Ain't no other black people screwed up. So when I got out of treatment, I was looking for a sponsor. So I was looking for a black sponsor. And I ended up with Mr. Wilson, who sponsored me for like 15 years. Whatever he taught me those first 15 years, I still practice today. One of my favorite chapters in the big book is The Family After. And it's a letter that Henry Ford wrote to him, say, each family that has gotten through these tough times almost always owes the family behind us this story. Through the grace of God, the help of wonderful friendship and a wonderful home group, been sober 34 years. I've been happy, joyous, and free. And I hadn't had to get butt naked and peep out in the windows in almost 35 years. And on top of that, Maddie hadn't called the police on me in almost 35 years. I'm gonna stay sober long enough. My whole wish list, if I had one, my top of the order be to call the police on Maddie one time, you know, one time. I can see that right now. Police saying, what do you want me to do with her, Mr. Thomas? Whatever. But she can't stay here tonight, whatever. Just one time. Thank you. I'm going to turn it over to Maddie.
Thank you, CT. And our next speaker is Maddie.
I can't do anything but laugh. Thank you, Leonard, for inviting CT and I to share tonight. And I'm almost about to get a resentment because y'all said then ate cake and we was on here for 10 minutes. But I'm not going to talk about that right now. My name is Maddie Thomas, and I am a very grateful Al-Anon. I came into this fellowship January the 19th, 1992. But I've been around this program since 1986. I'm a native Houstonian. I grew up in Houston. This is what I know. I've traveled to quite a few states and a couple of countries, but Texas is my home. I'm a Texas girl. That's all there is to it. As CT said, I did meet him at a baby shower. And I did not like him because, see, he had on cowboy boots, a dirty cowboy hat, and the men I dated were three-piece suits and shiny shoes. He met my son, and my son looked at him and he says, want to date CT? I said, I don't like CT. And my son would say, he's a cool guy. If there's any single women out there, I'm going to tell you, do not let your child pick your man. That's all there's to it. I did not grow up in alcoholism. My mom had me when she was 15. She said that was the reason she didn't have a child to go figure. My dad would have been an alcoholic, but my dad was stricken with polio back in the 50s. My dad's siblings, he was the youngest of 14, and all of them except two were alcoholics. My aunts were beautiful, beautiful women, but when they got drunk, their husband would beat them, and we saw that. On my mom's side of the family, there was no alcoholism. I never saw my grandpa or my grandmother take a drink. But my mom had five brothers, and they were very well known in the Fifth Ward community because they provided other community services, if you know what I mean. I went to church every Sunday, but one thing I knew was when I turned 18, I said I was never going to church again. I didn't like the church. I didn't like the preacher. I didn't like his wife. I didn't like none of them. And I said when I turned 18, I'd never go to church again. So when I turned 18, I went off to college, and I did not go to church again. However, when I went to college, my mom went back and got her GED. And after she got her GED, she went to nursing school. See, my mom led by example, but my mom raged all the time and she was always angry. And I swore I would not be like my mom. Well, I got a little education, so I moved up and moved out. And CT and I, when we got married, we bought a house in Missouri City. And I want you to know I learned to hate that house. We had a housewarming party, and I remember him inviting his friends. And one of his friends took me outside, and he looked around, and he says, you know, Maddie, this is a nice house. You won't have it long. Who says this? When we got a brand new home, we celebrating. But little did I know how true those words were. See, one day I come home, we have no lights. Another day I come home, we have no gas. One day I come home, we have no lights, no gas, and no water. So yeah, back in the 80s, Lifetime cable TV comes out, Lifetime movie channel is out, and they had this movie called The Burning Bed. I don't know if y'all ever saw The Burning Bed, but I love that movie because, see, this was a woman scorned. One of the things that we did a lot was, in Fifth Ward, you learn to fight. That's all there was to it. We fought all the time. It didn't matter, male, female, we fought. But see, I wasn't fighting anymore because I got a little education. I'm a little sophisticated. But living with alcohol and drugs, it just takes you to another place. And now and then they say, we either homicidal or suicidal. Now I wasn't going to kill me. That's one thing I wasn't going to do. I used to go to work every day. And at the end of the day, I would say, go home and kill CT. I was fixated on CT needed to die. If only CT was dead. See, I grew up in the projects. And I never, ever knew what it was like to live without light, gas, and water. Never. But here I am. We're supposed to, the two of us together, income, we're supposed to be living here. But I had never lived so low in my life. One day, CT comes home, and I'm in his face like I'm always, because he was full. And no man had ever put his hands on me. No man had ever hit me. He had the audacity to push me. And he pushed me so hard till I stood across the room. I didn't cry. I didn't do any of that. I got up. I fixed my clothes. I went and stood on the sofa, turned the TV on. I waited till he started snoring. And when he started snoring, I went to the garage. And I got the lighter fluid gasoline and walked in the bedroom and I covered him with it. And I stood at the foot of the bed with the cigarette lighter flicking and told him to wake his up and tell me why I shouldn't send him to hell. My son heard me screaming at him. And my son came and he said, if you do this, we won't have anybody. And I called my girlfriend and I said, you know, I got to go. Because if I don't go, I'm going to kill CT. And my kids won't have anyone. I have to say, angels, angels everywhere. I had no money in the bank. I don't know if you know what it's like to get paid on payday. And then you go to lunch, you're taking your staff to lunch. And you go to pay for lunch, and your card don't go through. And it's payday. How embarrassing is that? I go looking for a house, and I say, I have to go. And I found this house in a cul-de-sac in Missouri City, and they had a phone number for sale. And I called that number, and for the first time, because I wasn't a crier, but for the first time, I broke down and cried, and I told this stranger everything that was going on with me. And he says, Miss Thomas, if you want that house, I'll make it possible. And he made an appointment for me to come to the Galleria. And when I got there, it was him and an attorney. And I want you to know, when I left that office, I had the keys to a home with no money down, but a promise to pay because I had a job. And I kept saying, if only he wasn't there, everything would be okay. If only he wasn't there. And here I am standing in my home. And there's nobody there but me. And I'm screaming to the top of my voice. He wasn't there. Now, CT and I were separated for 3 years. CT was getting sober. He decided he'd go to treatment again and get sober. And I had a big resentment about that because he'd go to treatment, he'd get sober, and he'd go to treatment, but then he's still not taking care of responsibilities. He didn't take care of responsibilities when he was supposed to be working. Now he's in treatment. He's not taking responsibility. It is all on me. Oh. I said, God, if there's a God, I need to meet someone who don't drink, who don't do drugs, who don't do any of that. And I want you to know, be careful what you pray for, because I found out God does answer prayers. And I met this guy, wonderful man. And he did everything he could to make me happy. And he would always say to me, Matt, I'm always short. I don't care how much he did, I always found something wrong. I complained. And he says, Matt, I'm always short. Mm-hmm. Now it's 3 years, and it's my birthday. And CT calls me, and he says, can I come over? And I said, sure, and he did. He came over. And he says, it's your birthday, and he bought me a birthday present. And it was a beautiful emerald and diamond ring. And he invited me on a date. And I told him I had to think about it. Well, I go over to my girlfriend, he leaves, I go over to my girlfriend's house and I tell her mom, I says, Mom, CT wants to go on a date. And she says, Maddie, I'm not divorced. He's your husband. If you want to go out on a date with him, who cares what anybody thinks? So I said, okay. So I call him up. And he had, the conversation went like this. He answered the phone. I said, hi. He starts stuttering. Hi. I says, you still want to go on that date? He said, he stuttered some more. Yeah. And I hung the phone up. I looked at mom and dad, see, you got a woman over there. She said, no, man. I said, yes, you do. So I run home, I get cute, and I drive to his apartment. I knock on the door. He comes to the door, lights low, music soft, and she is sitting on the sofa. And it was okay, because I just walked in. And I says, hi, my name is Maddie. And I shake her hand. And I sit right down next to her. And I see, she says, you want something to drink? I said, yeah, I'll take some water. He gives me a glass of water. I take a sip. I look at him. I say, we need to walk her to her car because we have a date. And we walked her to her car and we went on our date. So there's a conference coming. CT invites me to this conference and I go. Now, I've been to some Al-Anon meetings when CT went in treatment the first time. And the meetings went like this. I want to kill myself because my husband can't stop drinking. I want to commit suicide. I raised my hand and they called them in. I said, kill him. Don't kill yourself. Kill him. Of course, that was the end. They didn't want me to say anything else. But we go to this conference. And at this conference, and it was in January, the weekend of January 19th, 1992, we go to this conference and I go to an Al-Anon meeting. And this Al-Anon meeting, not one person said anything about their loved ones. They talked about themselves and the things they were doing for themselves. And I went to the meetings all the weekend, the entire weekend. And I came back and I said, I need to find a meeting like that. Because they talked about those steps. And I didn't understand those steps. So I go and I find the meeting. But I want you to know when I found the meeting, I realized they didn't want me at that meeting. See, they need a secretary. And they hadn't had a secretary and I volunteered. But the next morning, I get a phone call from the woman. You know, every Al-Anon group have the one. And every Al-Anon group. And she wasn't there that night. And she called me the next morning and she says, hi, Maddie. And she goes on and then she tells me that I could not be the secretary for this group. Now, I want you to know when you go to Al-Anon meetings, they hug you and welcome you and all that. I didn't get any of that at that meeting at all. And when she told me that I couldn't be the secretary, I didn't hear anything else. I hung the phone up. And I want you to not clean my language up because I used a lot of four-letter words, but she was a five-letter word. And I told them, I says, they don't want me there. I said, but guess what? Every time they have a meeting, they're going to have to look at this black face. And I want you to know every time they doors open, I was there. Because see, I wasn't there to make friends. I was there to learn how to work those steps. I came for this program because of my husband, not realizing that I needed it for so much more. And I found the sponsor that I worked the steps. And my sponsor took me through the steps like this. Step one, two, three, giving up. I'm giving up the illusion that I could control someone. My sponsor didn't let me leave off step two because I told you I didn't have a God in my life. And we stayed on step two and we talked about it. We talked about all the things that had happened in my life. Step one, two, three, I had to learn to have some faith. I didn't even know how to pray above our Father. Then step four, five, and six, owning up. I had to own up to my behavior, then I had to make up I did my fourth step with the four M's, mothering, martyrdom, manipulation, management. That's me, ta-da! This is what I did for a living. I'm the oldest of six. I know how to take care of people. I treated my husband as if he was my child. I had no respect for him. I had to look at me. First time that I actually had to honestly look at me and my behavior. And guess what? I didn't like me. Thank you. I didn't like me. So now I'm at step 7, 8, 9, making up. I got to make some amends. I got to go back and talk to some of the people and make first people I had to make amends to. My sponsor put me at the list. Okay, yeah, because I beat myself up. I was the hardest of me, but I had to make amends to my children. Because the way that I treated them, I took all my anger, all my frustration, all of that, I took it out on them. And for many years, I let my son hold me hostage. And my sponsor told me I was going to have to parent my son as an adult because he was no longer my baby. And once I made those amends, I didn't have to do it again. Then she talked about making amends to CT. What? He the one that screwed up all the time. I had to make amends. Well, I tried to burn his butt up. I did some ugly things besides that to him. Who am I? Now we're at step 10, 11, 12, keeping up. You know, the first time I apologized to someone and with my children, they said, did you hear that? Because see, growing up, we didn't apologize for anything we did. If you didn't like it, if we hurt your feelings, oh well, suck it up, buttercup. I had to learn how to make amends. I found the God of my understanding. And I don't call him higher power, I call him God, because see, I realized God put angels in my life at the worst time of my life. It's God that I understand today sustained me at the most devastating time of my life when my son died. I found that being in service, and I talked about that I chaired Heart to Heart, which is a women's conference, but I've done a lot more than that. Service, when I got busy, I got better. Those do's and don'ts, do play, find recreation and hobbies. I do all that. Self-love, that's what they told me. I love me some me. That's all there is to it. I don't care what nobody else thinks of me, but I think of myself today. And I learned this working these steps. What a concept. I've been a GR. I've been a DR. I've chaired the All Texas Al-Anon Al-Ateen Conference. I've sat on the board of the All Texas Al-Anon Al-Ateen Board. I've been an alternate delegate, and today I stand before you as the delegate of Texas East. Service. But I learned that by working those 12 steps. But not only do I work those 12 steps, I also work those 12 traditions and those 12 concepts of service. See, I say for me, those 12 steps keeps me from committing suicide. I'm not going to kill myself anyway, but I've learned to love myself. Those 12 traditions is about relationships. And it keeps me from committing homicide. See, I don't have to try to burn CT up today. Nor do I have to make anyone else feel bad or try to convince them that what I say is the only way to do things. And those 12 concepts of service, it keeps the fellowship of Al-Anon from committing genocide. See, I need to be in the room. I've been in this room 31 years, but every day, see, because I'm on this side of the dirt, every day I have to work those 12 steps and see where I am. Every day. For the newcomer, come all the way in, sit all the way down, and stay. Because there is hope. Hold on, pain does end. And when you think you're at the last, remember what you Change attitude, change behavior. My favorite book is How Al-Anon Works for Family and Friends of Alcoholics. I hear people using the word qualifier. I want you to know Al-Anon don't have the qualifiers. I belonged in these rooms many years ago. I just didn't know it. But when I came in and I stayed, life is better. Thank you for being here.